Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, it's Chris Harrington on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show, presented by Church Health, caring for people all around us. Give today at churchhealth.org.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Think About Me by Fleetwood Mac from their 1978 album Tusk. One of the Christine McVie songs. My favorite of the three Fleetwood Mac, that era Fleetwood Mac singers. Christine McVie passed away yesterday.
So she was not the most famous of the three, right?
No, I mean Stevie Nicks was definitely the most charismatic.
Right.
You know, and so she became really sort of the star. If any individual was the star, it was probably Stevie Nicks. And really the second most charismatic was probably Mick Fleetwood, the drummer, the guy who's like, right, you know, 6'10" or whatever.
So what was her story? It's Christine McVie.
She, you know, Fleetwood Mac, people think of Fleetwood Mac in terms of that unit, the Stevie Nicks, Lindsey Buckingham, all that. That was like a decade into the run of Fleetwood Mac that came together. And so Fleetwood Mac started as a 60s, maybe not quite a decade, but they put out like 7-8 albums before Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham joined the group. And so they started as a blues band, a British blues band, blues rock band in the late 60s. And Christine McVie, her maiden name I think was Christine Perfect. I think that was actually her name.
Yep.
She was a singer in a different British blues rock band. And then she married John McVie, the Mick in Fleetwood Mac, the Mac in Fleetwood Mac. She married the bass player. She married him and then joined Fleetwood Mac. So she was not in Fleetwood Mac at the very beginning,
right,
but she was in Fleetwood Mac for like 3 or 4 albums before.
And really the biggest ones, right? Rumors and
Tusk. No. What I'm saying is she was in Fleetwood Mac for 3 or 4 albums
before
Buckingham and Nicks joined, and then it became the Fleetwood Mac we know now.
And of those, like, she wrote a lot of the biggest, wrote and performed a lot of the biggest songs,
she did.
Right?
The one I played is not one of their biggest hits, but she Don't Stop Is Her, You Make Loving Fun, Songbird, Say You Love Me.
You Make Loving Fun. So I went back. I don't know any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Went back, and that was because she was married to the bass player, right? But she was having an affair with
Somebody else.
And
it was a roadie, I believe.
It was about that guy, the You Make Love and Fun. And Rumors was evidently about...
But she apparently told her husband initially it was about their dog. The family dog. But Rumors is an album...
Rumors
sort of,
about these tangled
it's
relationships?
Famously about these two marriages within the band both breaking up at the same time. That's sort of famously what the album... What sort of generated the content of the album.
And then the band, though, continued...
Yeah.
With these two couples broken up and yet... It continued after that, right?
Yep.
And then she disappeared to England. And then she came back and lived in a castle, evidently.
Yeah, I don't know all the life story, but yeah.
I found it depressing. I'm glad she made it to a old age. She died at 79.
Right.
But to have her die of old age suggests I'm getting old. Like, that was like, right. Like, it was a little depressing in a kind of a different way. Than,
I mean, 79 still out on the horizon. Right?
It's funny. Jennifer and I were talking about this because Jennifer Biggs just turned 60. If you haven't wished Jennifer Biggs happy birthday, wish her happy birthday when I see her on social media. But she just turned 60 and found it to be a little depressing. And I turned 60 a year ago. And The problem with 60 is 70 is next. Like, right. You can say what you want about 60. You can argue that 60's 70's elderly, isn't it? Like 70 and 79
yeah,
is
I mean,
a full
you know, that's,
measure.
That's post. I think you, when you, I think you know when you hit Social Security eligibility, maybe that's the official marker. Right?
I'm literally getting burial insurance emails. Right. Burial insurance emails pop up as my spam.
You haven't
now.
Hit the Social Security age yet.
I have hit Social Security. I'm way yeah. No, not Social Security, but I've hit. Oh yeah, AARP. I've hit AARP.
Yeah, I don't
age.
Care about that. I'm saying social security eligibility. That's the marker.
Yeah, I've not hit that yet, but I'm bearing down on it. I gather, by the way, and I'll people can go listen to the podcast for themselves. You talked about birthday cakes on this last podcast.
Yeah, we did. Jennifer's birthday. We're both coming off of Thanksgiving, so we you know wasn't a lot new to talk about.
Right.
We'd both been off, sort of off. I mean, doing Grizzlies, but so yeah, we talked about cakes. Just you know, cake preferences.
Do you
among
have a
other
favorite
among other
cake
topics.
Place to get a slice of cake in Memphis.
No. My favorite cake in Memphis is whatever my daughter makes.
Is she a good cake maker?
She is. She's a very good baker.
What's her cake? What does she have a favorite cake? Is there a cake? Do you request a cake for your birthday?
Yeah. The one she made me for my birthday last year, I will now request again.
As your cake. What was it?
It was a chocolate layer cake with peanut butter buttercream frosting.
That sounds delicious.
Yes. She made for Thanksgiving.
Do you know where it's from? Where'd she get the recipe?
Oh, I have no idea. For Thanksgiving, she made, at my urging, and she did it, she made a brown sugar, a triple layer brown sugar cake with cranberry buttercream frosting, cranberry meringue, buttercream meringue or whatever frosting, and then a cranberry ganache in between the
That sounds
layers.
Spectacular.
It was great.
Okay. Grizzlies played last night. Before I get to that, we didn't do it yesterday. So let's do it today. You tell the people again why you did a list of the 100 best movie, your ranking of the 100 best movies.
I was going to get out ahead of the news, sort of. It was inspired by the Sight and Sound list, which will come out, I think, in about 3 hours, midday today. And Sight and Sound is a British film magazine, and every 10 years since 1952, they have done an international poll, critics, historians poll, of greatest films ever. It basically is the film canon that it gets updated every 10 years. It's a really big deal within sort of, you know,
the film world.
And like for 50 years straight, Citizen Kane held the top spot. And the big news in 2012 was that Citizen Kane got knocked off the top spot by Vertigo, Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo.
Hmm.
And people were wondering, will there be a new number one? Only 3 movies ever in the history of the poll have been number one.
Which are Citizen Kane, Vertigo, and
Bicycle Thieves in the first poll in 1952. And then Citizen Kane from 1962 to 2002, Vertigo in 2012, and some people are speculating 2001 A Space Odyssey is going to take the top spot. To me, that's a line.
Where do you have none of those films are, oh no, Citizen Kane is, but none of the other ones are not in your...
Vertigo's in my top 100, but towards the bottom.
In your top 100, but towards the bottom.
Yeah.
Bicycle Thieves.
I don't think Vertigo is the best Alfred Hitchcock. Vertigo is a masterpiece, but to me, it's not the best Alfred Hitchcock movie. That's the real window. Not even the best Alfred Hitchcock movie starring Jimmy Stewart made in the 1950s.
And where is Space Odyssey in yours?
It's not. I think the first half hour of that movie is sort of spectacular, but it's spectacular in sort of an audacious, formal kind of way. I don't find the movie profound, and so it's not a thing for me.
All right, so before I get to your top 10, let's go through some of these other ones that people might find interesting. You have Goodfellas at 23. Ahead of and you lumped together the two Godfather movies at 24.
Yeah, that's almost a gambit. Not that it matters. It's just something I put on Twitter. But just trying to think about that stuff. I think the earthiness of Goodfellas I prefer to the sort of the austerity and sort of classicism of the Godfather movies.
Jaws is the best Spielberg film at 45.
I think that is the consensus. I think that is the consensus opinion that that's the best Spielberg film, and I agree with that consensus.
Pulp Fiction at 49.
Yeah, I struggled with the Tarantino stuff because I get 3 Tarantinos on my list. Obviously, he's probably...
What are the other ones you have? Is that the highest one, right?
I don't think so. I think I put Once Upon a Time in Hollywood even a little bit higher.
Maybe, okay.
And then Jackie Brown. I think those are clearly the 3 best Tarantino movies. And Tarantino, for my generation, really looms so... I mean, that sort of... He is definitive to what the idea of like getting excited about film when I was in college.
Vertigo you have at 77... Bull Durham is, I'm looking for sports movies here, Bull Durham at 82.
Yeah, I love Bull Durham. Bull Durham, to me, it's not because of the sports angle, although
right, no.
I think that works. to me, Bull Durham is the one main is of all the mainstream Hollywood comedies of the last 40 years. Bull Durham is the one that is most like the great Hollywood comedies of mid-century, the great classic Hollywood 40s
in what,
and 50s.
When you say most like, in what?
In terms of just the intelligence and the characterization and just the fabric of it, I think this those movies, they don't they truly don't make
film.
Them like
it's
they
not
used
just
to.
Slapstick. It's a rich film.
Yeah, it's I mean, people won't know these names, but it reminds me a little bit of a Preston Sturges movie, a Howard Hawks movie. Some of those. I'm a real classic Hollywood guy, and so if my list is overrepresentative of anything, it's.
I was going to say, where is there one that you expect to be very hot? So, well, that in the ways that yours will depart from the consensus from the
this poll. The poll when it comes out will be pretty heavy in European art film stuff, which I am not. I sort of went through that in college, and I just don't care as much anymore. The Bergman and the Fellini and the, you know, Andrei Tarkovsky. And it will be a much more European-oriented, a much more art film-oriented, whereas I have more of a classic Hollywood kind of bit myself.
All right, so here was your top 10. Give us a little bit of a sentence on each one. The Rules of the Game.
Rules of the Game is a French movie, Jean Renoir, late 30s.
Can anyone watch it anywhere?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head where
right.
everything
but it'll,
is.
It'll
on every
exist somewhere. It's not. Yeah, you can.
If you ever want to know where you can watch something, go to a website called Just Watch and just type in the name of something. It'll tell you where you can find it.
This is 10, by the way. I'm doing a reverse order. Yeah, go ahead. So it's a
genre. Rules of the Game has been top 10 most of the time over the years. It's my favorite foreign language film. It's sort of an upstairs downstairs movie about. It's these rich people gather at this estate for a weekend party, but then all the like house servants are there too, and you get the different modes of activity. It's the classic upstairs downstairs movie that sort of influenced a lot of others. Like
9 Chinatown.
I think hopefully a lot of people know what Chinatown is. That's, you know, mid-70s film noir, L.A. Jack Nicholson, Faye Dunaway, John Huston. Just the classic sort of twisty, seedy, you know, modern film noir kind of script.
8 Mulholland Drive.
David Lynch. That might crack top 10. It'll be interesting to see. That might be the one that might end up being the highest ranked movie on the actual list from the current century. David Lynch, sort of, and also sort of a Los Angeles modern noir kind of thing.
Why, by the way, aren't there more on from the current century? I mean, higher on the list.
It takes, I mean, how many people are going to say a book from the last 10 years is the greatest novel of all time right. compared to Dickens yeah, and Twain? Right, and it right. takes time for things to right. settle, you know?
Okay. Killer of Sheep.
Killer of Sheep is the most obscure movie in my own top 10, definitely. It's only played, it was barely released ever. And in fact, the only time it's ever played in Memphis was it played for one night at the Brooks Museum 15 years ago.
Really?
And partly it was because it was a student film. It's like a 70, 80 minute black and white. Maybe this filmmaker, Charles Burnett, black filmmaker who grew up in Mississippi and then his family moved to Los Angeles, so he ended up living in Watts. And it's about the life of a family and their neighbors in Watts, you know, in the early 70s. And it's just sort of it's almost like a tone poem, like a blues poem. It's not really a tightly scripted movie. It's just sort of impressions of the life of this community in Watts. And I think it's a brilliant movie, but it hasn't been widely seen.
Citizen Kane?
Yeah. When I say everyone knows, but right. most people don't. Most people don't know anything anymore.
They don't know anything anymore.
Citizen Kane has this reputation as being sort of like the great movie, right? Yeah. And I think for that reason, probably a lot of people have not seen it because, you know, it's black and white and it's old and whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, give me Marvel Avengers.
Exactly.
Citizen Kane is fun. And that's why I don't actually like the shift from Citizen Kane to Vertigo to even if it's 2001, even though it's newer movies, it's movies that get less enjoyable and less fun. I think Citizen Kane is so much life in it in terms of the performances, in terms of the way it's constructed. It's basically Orson Welles was like 25 years old when he made the movie and he wrote it and he directed it and he stars in it. And it's basically the whole movie is like a John Morant 360-degree dunk in traffic. It's just this 25-year-old dude going, look at me. I can do everything. I'm the best in the world at all of this. Watch me cook. That is Citizen Kane.
Wow.
Have you seen Citizen Kane?
I have, but a long time ago.
Okay.
A long time ago. I should rewatch it. The Shop Around the Corner.
I
think this may be the only one I've seen.
You've seen The Shop Around the Corner?
No. Citizen Kane may be the only
Shop
one.
Shop Around
of your
the
top
Corner
ten,
is a real personal pick for me.
Uh-huh.
And it's a classic romantic comedy. But to me, the greatness of it is not the romantic comedy stuff, which is great. To me, it's the greatest workplace comedy. It's I think 1940. It's Jimmy Stewart. It's directed by this guy, Ernst Lubitsch, who is a German expatriate. And it's set in a little leather goods shop in Hungary on the eve of World War II. And to me, the greatness of that movie is that it's about the importance of being decent to other people in a moment when you have to be really concerned about yourself. And so these jobs are intensely important to these people, and they're in threat of losing these jobs all the time. And it's about the interactions among these people in this really fraught moment. And I to me, it's a great, great film.
Huh. Now, when they made it, I guess World War II was under...
To me, when I look back on my own list, one of the things that jumps out to me, and I'm sure someone's written a book about this, the American movies made in the midst of World War II or immediately after are unbelievable. To watch those movies and think about, like, there's another Ernst Lubitsch movie, To Be or Not to Be, which was remade by Mel Brooks later, but the original, there's a line, the critic David Thompson has a line that says, you know, in the middle of a total conflict, one side made to be or not to be and one side didn't, and that's how you know who to root for. Like, it's a movie about, because it's made by a German expatriate who fled Germany, right, and he's in Hollywood. And the movie, which is made in like 1941 or whatever, it's about a Shakespearean theater troupe in Warsaw as the Nazis come in, and Jack Benny is like the lead, and it's a total comedy. And it's like a comedy on Nazism and about resistance to that made right in the moment by a German filmmaker. It's incredible.
Meet Me in St. Louis.
To me, Meet Me in St. Louis is both the greatest musical of all time and also the greatest family movie of all time. By family movie, I don't mean movie for family, although that too. I mean movie about family. And it's a year in the life of a family in St. Louis on the eve of the World's Fair, which was like 1902 or whatever, made in the 1940s. Another movie made during World War II. And so this Judy Garland is the second oldest daughter. She debuts the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. But it's about, like, the father comes home and says, I got a new job in New York. We're moving to New York, and which throws the family in crisis. And they have a year together in St. Louis before they're supposed to move to New York. And even though it's set in you know, 1902 or whatever, to me, when you put that in the context of World War II, that sense of, like, you know,
dislocation,
clinging to your family and dislocation, to me, that really is rich throughout the movie.
Do the Right Thing.
The best movie made since I started watching movies in real life, I think. Spike Lee, second or third, about the hottest day of the summer in Bensonhurst, New York, and just the life of the community. And then a tragic thing happens and it all blows up. But to me, like, it's lost none of its power since the day it was made. That movie should be, and I wish that movie would get in the top 10 of the real poll.
Rear Window.
To me, Rear Window is just a perfect movie. Like, to me, like I was saying earlier about the Vertigo, to me, not even the best Alfred Hitchcock movie starring Jimmy Stewart made in the 1950s. Rear Window is a perfect work of entertainment and a perfect work of art. It is both profound and easy.
Right.
And to me, it is the most, it's not my favorite movie because I have it at number two, but to me, it is the most perfect movie ever made.
And number one, which we've talked about before,
yeah,
Rio Bravo.
It's another personal pick, although it's traditionally been in the top 100 on the Sight and Sound poll, so it's not like I'm alone in that. Tarantino's a big Rio Bravo guy. Rio Bravo, similar to Rear Window, not as perfect because it sort of dawdles. It probably goes on 20 minutes too long because they're just hanging out. it really is. The whole movie is like just dudes hanging out. Like, let's hang out on the set. And it's Howard Hawks is my favorite filmmaker, and there's lots of Hawks on my list. But Hawks had this thing where he liked to put business into his movies. It didn't matter. It wasn't everything about getting from point A to point B in the story. Right. It's like, hey, we got Dean Martin in this movie, and we got Ricky Nelson in this movie. Let's just hang out in the jail and, like, pick up a guitar, and let's do this for 15 minutes.
Right.
And, like, there's just so much stuff in that movie. And to me, like Rear Window, it works just like an entertainment, but then there's a real undercurrent to it, which you can get into or not, and that, to me, Rio Bravo is a movie about egalitarianism. It's about...
That's the undercurrent?
To me, it's... He made it, I could go on forever, and I know we've gone on too long. He actually made it as an answer to the movie High Noon. Howard Hawks went to the theater, sat in the theater, watched High Noon, and hated it.
Really?
Hated it, and wanted to come out and make an answer to it. High Noon was a movie about, starring Gary Cooper, it was about a sheriff, an old West sheriff, who's in trouble, who's facing danger, and he goes around town asking for help, and no one will give it to him. And Howard Hawks hated this. He thought it was unprofessional and Hawks is big on professionalism, codes of professionalism. He thought it was unbecoming of a sheriff to go around begging for help. That's not what a real man would do. He also thought it was unbecoming of people not to give him help because he was very optimistic about people.
Right.
He said, you know, he hated that this guy's asking for help and he hated that he's not getting it, and that just went against what he thought about humanity. And so Rio Bravo is the opposite. John Wayne is the sheriff, and he's holding a prisoner, and the prisoner's family is going to come in and bust him out of jail the next day, and there's a clock on it, and it's a dangerous situation. He refuses to ask anyone for help, but he gets it everywhere. But who he gets it from is what's notable. He gets it from the town drunk, played by Dean Martin. He gets it from the an old cripple, played by Walter Brennan. Old Stumpy is the name of the character. He gets it from a teenager. He gets it from a woman of ill repute passing through town who's like 19 years old, Angie Dickinson, in her debut. He gets it from the Mexican hug couple who run the hotel. At one point, a friend of his who's a rancher is passing through town, and he's surveying the situation, and he says to the John Wayne character, "An old drunk and a cripple, is that all you got?" John Wayne just says, "That's what I got." Right. And to me, the message of the movie is, like, everyone has value, everyone has worth, you know.
Real
Bravo. My favorite movie.
You can see Chris's complete list on Twitter. And the nice thing is that we didn't have to talk much about the Grizzlies last night. Did you? So you...
I watched the fourth quarter live, and I went back and watched bits and pieces of the rest of it. It seemed like, you know, in some ways an anomalous game, like all the games matter.
What was the Hubie line about 10 games or 5 games?
Yeah,
or what was
I don't
that?
Even know if I would characterize it quite like that, but you didn't get blown out of the building. Sometimes you're just blown out, whatever. But the weird thing about it was they turned the ball over like 30 times, and they missed like 12 free throws, and they're on the road against, again, the Wolves are like, we're 10-11 before the game. They're disappointing, but they're not bad.
Right.
And so you're on the road against a decent team, and you turned the ball over all over the place, and you missed all the free throws, and you lose by 8. And so I don't know. I did say, this is not hindsight, I said on the show yesterday, like, I wasn't convinced losing Towns was going to make them worse in the short term. And I do think what you saw, partly what I sort of talked about yesterday, was their defense was better, and there was a more coherent sense of pecking order, and that was give Anthony Edwards the ball.
Right. Well, their coach said this may have been Anthony Edwards' best game, and it probably isn't a coincidence because he now knows he's the guy, right? And he is 17 in the fourth quarter. He had 5 steals, 3 blocks. He was great.
Yeah.
It does make you wonder then, though, if that's true, is the way forward to deal Karl Anthony Towns?
I think people have been speculating about that for 2 months.
Right.
And I think...
What do you get for Karl Anthony Towns?
It's a good question, because there's a long track record here of him putting up good numbers to not much effect. The contract is huge. He's not, like, necessarily the easiest guy to and so I don't know. It's a good question. We'll see. I think he will have his moment of the sun, and in the sun, I mean... 7 different national writers writing, making up Carl Anthony Towns trades in stories. I think that's coming. Yeah.
I don't know much more. Would you like seeing Kyle again last night? Kyle started.
He started.
Not the start.
He started. He had a nice game. You got beat by Kyle Anderson last night.
And I got D'Anthony Melton coming down the pike, and he started.
Friday.
Yeah,
right.
He got whacked, though. All right, thank you, Chris. You can see his list at the over on Twitter.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.